From theunce.com, this is The Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to The Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest on this week's program is Dhruva Ganeshan, better known as DJ Dhruva from Subswara. This Brooklyn-based group mixes live drumming with hard-hitting dubstep bass lines and a hip-hop mentality to create a global stew of dance music. They'll be appearing at Interstellar Meltdown at Wakarusa, as well as Camp Bisco this summer. Let's get right to the interview.
Subswara originally started as an event in 2005, actually. And what it was, you know, three of us, Sundar, Had, and myself, came together into New York at around the same time. Both Sundar and I used to live in San Francisco, and we were good acquaintances then. We weren't, you know, collaborators or tight friends at the time, but I moved to New York, and then Sundar happened to move here, unbeknownst to me, 6 months later, and then we ran into each other, and, you know, obviously we knew both of us were involved in music and wanted to start something, doing something in New York, and then Hodge, who had been living upstate and then traveling a lot, came down to New York around that time as well, and we're doing these underground events called Freak Factory. So we decided to launch our own monthly. And so that started, and then it was basically, you know, a night of where each of us would DJ, and I'd also play percussion, and Sundar would scratch, but never, you know, all of us together necessarily. And then we'd have guests, you know, from around the globe. And, you know, about a year into it, we started, or a little less than a year into it, we started playing together during the sets. You know, I played percussion, and then Sundar would be scratching, and Haji would be DJing. And then that was a very nascent part of us starting as kind of a live sound system thing. And then that's where the idea of us being a band developed. So then we kind of became more of a touring act, and then Dave Sharma, who's also part of Subswara now, joined the group, and then we became, you know, an act and started, you know, toured a lot more, and then obviously we made an album and did a bunch of zillion remixes for people and stuff. So that's, it kind of, that's the genesis. It started as an event, a monthly event in New York City that went on for about 3.5 years, but about a little less than a year into it, we became kind of an identity unto ourselves, you know, not just an event, but an actual band, and here we are now. Sundar's not actually in the group anymore, and that's not for any frictional reason, just because, you know, life takes you in different directions. You know, he's married and has other things that he has that keep him busy in his life, but he still collaborates with us once in a while. But the current manifestation of Subswara is Haas, Dave, and myself.
Have you all had musical training? You were saying that you play a bit of percussion. Are you all trained in any way, or did you sort of pick this up along the way?
No, I'm a trained drummer. I mean, I started playing drums when I was in eighth grade. And Dave Sharma is also a trained drummer, a very accomplished drummer. He toured with Moby a couple summers ago. He was the lead percussionist on Andrew Lloyd Webber's Bombay Dreams. And, you know, he actually also teaches percussion. So he's, you know, a very advanced percussionist. And, like, I studied tabla as well. So did Dave, and he continues to also. I studied for a few years when I was living in California. So both he and I have had formal musical training. Hodge hasn't had so much formal musical training as much as he's like a, you know, just a very, he has an innate and strong affinity to music and understanding it and, you know, the flow of music, and has a great depth of knowledge for music from every possible corner of the world, and electronic and non-electronic and remote tribal music. I mean, he's just an encyclopedic kind of knowledge of music. So all that kind of comes together in what we do.
I'd like to get back to some of that world music in a second, but first, I wonder, what are your roles during the creative process? You all have such varied backgrounds. When you come together to write or create, how are the various jobs assigned?
Well, it's pretty collaborative. Dave and I do pretty much most of the production. We're the main producers. So, you know, we're making the beats and the bass lines. And Dave's kind of the lead. He takes the lead when it comes to mixing stuff down. He's a really good mix engineer. In terms of playing, you know, the live stuff in conjunction with the electronic elements, we both do that. Dave and I both play drums, and we also collaborate with a lot of other outside artists. So, you know, we bring in session players. Like, actually, today, we were just working with Stuart, who's one of the horn players from Antibalas.
And, oh, great.
We're collaborating with them on one of our tracks. Stuart and I actually went to college together, and got back in touch after a long time, so we're collaborating on track together. So we also, you know, we bring in guest vocalists, we bring in guest instrumentalists and stuff like that, and Hodge also, he's involved kind of in the writing process, also from kind of a conceptual point of view, helping tailor some of the melodies and stuff like that, and while Dave and I are doing most of the driving, he definitely has a lot of input into kind of the direction of the song. And then when we perform, we all run Ableton Live now. You know, we perform using Ableton Live. We have various MIDI triggers, you know, electronic drum pads that we play loaded with tons of different samples and stuff like that. So we play a lot of the percussion and a lot of also the melodic elements of our tracks live as well. So that's basically the configuration when we play. And then given certain circumstances, we also break out like live tabla and stuff like that too. But typically we have right now like an Ableton setup with live electronic elements that we play.
Wave files rub on your brain files constantly. Open frequency coming way louder than the wire that's wet to be. Bar threat, deck around where you have to be. Jumping off hard in the front and the back of me.
You mentioned the tabla, and I've heard wind instruments from India and certainly a lot of African drums and maybe even some wind percussion instruments from across the world. Did you grow up with this kind of music, or were you exposed to it in a particular way? I mean, I understand a lot of you have an Indian background. Where did this global sound enter into your lives?
Well, we definitely grew up with it. I grew up in a very kind of musical household, and my parents always encouraged me to participate in music. You know, I started off playing piano, and then after years of studying, I just started playing drums. You know, my mom ran and still does run a dance company. There would always be dancers and musicians in our house, and, you know, she was the producer for these shows, and she'd, you know, help conceive these, you know, classical Indian dance dramas that also collaborated with ballets and stuff like that, and you know, some of the shows performed at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I mean, like, you know, so there was always that element of art and musical leaning in my house. It was always there. Dave, you know, he's kind of the global element of where he comes from. I mean, he's half Indian. His dad's Indian and his mom's American. So he also, you know, he had a kind of mixed bag of an upbringing too, and definitely has a lot of roots in his South Asian background as well. And Hodge has kind of lived a lot of places all over the world, you know, and so it's more of an experiential connection to music as opposed to formal practice as much. That said, you know, even though there's global elements in what we do, you know, be it South Asian or Jamaican or African or whatever, the whole idea, you know, we don't think of ourselves as a world music group by any means, you know, like we draw upon a lot of influences that appear in our music, but it's not meant to be like, oh, this is ethnic music, because it's just a percussion element that's from South Asia is just as important as the bass line that is very urban New York or UK, you know, oriented and stuff like that. It's just all that stuff comes together in a certain way. So as much as we have those influences in our background, we draw upon a lot of different things that have very kind of equal weight in what we do. The dub influence and the hip-hop influence, you know, and the straight kind of electronic, glitchy and experimental stuff is very present in what we do too, just as much as the kind of organic and global element. So we try to make it all happen in such a way where there's not a definitive finger that you put on, oh, that is what they do, ethnic electronic music or something. It's not that, you know, because you hear one track and you hear another track and you still feel a certain commonality in terms of the energy and the intensity of it, but it could be drawn from very different places.
I'm glad you mentioned that sort of bass sound, that wompy, dubsteppy sound from urban music as well as from the UK. What were some of your earliest influences that pushed you in that direction? Because I feel like that's also a major element of your sound.
Right. Well, I started first getting into electronic music when the first stuff I listened to was like Tricky and Old School Massive Attack, the Aphex Twin, Square Pusher, music stuff that was happening, you know, in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, that stopped me from thinking that electronic music wasn't as relevant to music as live music, because it was. I mean, it's just the tool that you work on. You know, putting together a track using software and producing it that way can be equally inspiring and challenging and deep as playing in a live band. So I started to really appreciate that when I heard those acts. And then, you know, obviously the way things progressed, you know, it's not like electronic and live are oil and water. I mean, obviously they integrate and they're very much interwoven together in what we do and in what a lot of acts that are pushing the envelope a lot more do. I mean, you know, on the band side and on the, you know, kind of DJ/producer side. I mean, you see bands using electronics a lot more, and, you know, Radiohead did a lot to kind of, you know, bring attention to that. And then on the electronic side, you see producers and DJs acknowledging the need for kind of more of that human relationship with an audience by playing stuff live. I think it's nice to see all those boundaries crumble as things progress.
Tell me about the scene in Brooklyn. It's a hotbed for indie music of all stripes. How receptive is the audience to your brand of electronic dance music?
Well, I think it's been pretty receptive. I mean, we definitely saw a lot of growth of interest from when we started as first time we did our event to like 35 monthly events in, which is basically when we stopped doing the monthly event because we got too busy with touring and stuff. There was a very loyal crowd. We see lots of the same faces, and it was always like a very strong crowd that showed up. You know, and then as that went on, and even when we stopped doing an event, and, you know, you see every time we do play, I mean, be it at, you know, venues with live acts and stuff like that, you know, it's still very present. We're still seeing a lot of the same faces and new faces that are getting really interested in it. And, you know, that's part of what happened in the electronic music scene here, I think, in the last few years, had to do with kind of us and our, you know, brother and sister type of events and crews that are also doing stuff that really came to, you know, attention at the same time. So, like, us, Dub War, I don't know if you're familiar with that event or that crew, obviously, like, kind of the flagship dubstep party in New York and arguably the country. We were all doing events at the same place and came up together at the same time. We're all very good friends. And Trouble and Bass, you know, like, the Drop the Line and that whole crew, AC Slater, you know, they are also doing an event at Love when we were doing it there. And so we all kind of like, Love was the venue, by the way, that we used to do our event at least the last year. So we all kind of came up in this general community together of kind of bass music, but with hands in different areas. And that's grown and developed a lot, you know. So I think it's a very strong presence now, you know, because that whole thing started to happen, you know, about 4+ years ago, and it's gained a lot of steam since then.
Belgrade Rhythm from Subsoir's record Kudia.
I'd like for you to tell me about your debut album. Why did it take 2 years to complete? Was it difficult to find the time to get into the studio, or maybe the money to get into the studio, or are all of you just absolute perfectionists about each track?
I think we're perfectionists, and that's not to say that album's perfect, because I don't think it is. I think, you know, it's something we're proud of, but, you know, like in anything you do artistically, you move on from it and you get better. It took 2 years because I think we were finding our footing as a group. You know, we knew, you know, what direction we were going performance-wise. It took some time to figure out our identity of what our sound is, you know, and what we want to put on an album. Have it be as cohesive and also kind of far-reaching as our influences are, but doing it a way where it sticks together. So that took some time, and, you know, a lot of stuff was recorded in different parts of the world. When you're working with vocal collaborators and stuff like that, it takes some time for that to get coordinated, especially if you're working remotely and stuff like that. You know, I mean, we coordinated with Zulu, for example, who's, you know, on Ninja Tune, and he lives in Chicago. So it takes some time to kind of get all that stuff coordinated. And also, it is our first effort. We wanted to, you know, be methodical about it and do it at the right pace. And, you know, I think we're a little faster now, even though the album that we're working on, our second album now, that's going to come out later this year, it'll have been 2 years since the last album, but we've also done like 12 remixes, like an album worth of remixes for different artists since that time. And I think when you, as you grow as a musician, you know, you might get faster and more kind of prolific, but it also, you know, when you go in different directions too, like there are some different directions that we're going on this album, you know, you take the time with it to make sure and live with it a bit, you know, to let that develop properly and make sure it represents what you want, you know, as a growth since the last album and a personal growth to ourselves, within ourselves. So the short answer is that first album took a while because we were basically finding our footing and finding out what we want that to sound like as our first effort and the coordination that goes along with it.
So, you know, you've got that first album out. What are some of the big milestones that have happened since that's come out? I know you've gotten to share the stage with some really huge acts in the electronic music scene. Are there any that really stand out in your mind, like, wow, I can't believe we're opening for so-and-so, or, you know, one of your big influences remixes one of your tracks?
Well, I think we've had a good amount of those moments, and they keep kind of increasing, and, you know, I think that's more of a testament to our excitement just about doing the music. So and, you know, seeing it grow. So one of the initial milestones, I think, was, you know, getting the attention of Marianne Hobbs, and she had us do a feature mix on her radio show, and she said that, you know, it was one of the top mixes of her show that year.
That's big.
You know,
that's
was
huge.
A great, that was a great milestone to have. And we played at Coachella, we played at All Points West. Hard to pin it down exactly, but I mean, I think it's just general excitement, you know, doing things like we are. I mean, right now we just did a remix for Balkan Beatbox, which are one of our favorite bands, and they really love it. And this is for the next record that's coming out next week. So let's see. I mean, and we played with Diplo and a bunch of other artists like Flying Lotus. I mean, a whole host of people that we played alongside. But I think the most kind of gratifying stuff is that, you know, even if it's big as a venue as you might play, like a big festival or whatever, I think it's the level of performance that you achieve and the connection with the crowd that you achieve no matter what the event is. So, I mean, we've had a couple, like, small events, you know, just playing to, like, 100, 150 people or something, but the connection is so great and so good in terms of the energy that those are some of the highest moments that we have. But it is nice to see a growth in terms of who we're collaborating with and sharing stages with, and media, you know, help supporting us as well. I mean, Fader just did a feature on us. So, I mean, it's nice to see that growth, but I think we try to maintain as much of a down-to-earth and humble view on it as we can. I mean, in the end, this is all very underground music that's getting more attention progressively. We're just trying to do as good a job with it as we can.
You mentioned Coachella. Festival season is right around the corner. Are there any of those big shows that you're looking forward to in particular? I know you're featured prominently at Interstellar Meltdown, Wakarusa's electronic showcase.
Yep, so Wakarusa, we're doing Camp Disco. We are doing this festival called the Big Bounce in the West Coast. I think we're playing a couple smaller festivals too, like it's called the Big Up Festival, which is in upstate New York. Yeah, no, pretty fun stuff. You know, there's a good, busy summertime schedule coming up. It's not as packed as we would normally make it, just because we're also finishing this album, so it's hard to finish working on stuff when you're on the road a lot. So we're spacing things out a little more and kind of focusing a lot of the touring in the fall when the album comes out.
And you know, finally, what can we expect from this new album that is coming out later this year?
There's stuff that's really exploring melody on a deeper scale than I think the last album. Not to say that there wasn't melody on the last album, but you know, I think there's a lot of focus on developing, like, really interesting melodic ideas in this one. There's new collaborators that we're working with that we're really excited about. You know, like I mentioned, we're working with Antibolus. There's this great brass band called the Red Blood Brass Band from New York that's been getting a lot of attention. There's a few rappers that we're working with that are, you know, very pretty prominent acts. That's exciting. I can't say who they are right now, but they're definitely, like, people who pretty much household names in the hip-hop community, so that's cool. So that's a different direction, you know, because there's definitely, like, the kind of ragga dancehall element of vocals on the last one, but there's probably going to be a little bit more of a hip-hop presence on this album, so that's exciting. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, definitely not genre-specific music. It's, you know, the stuff that touches on, like, the dub territory, the, you know, the hip-hop territory, some of the more dancehall-leaning territory and stuff, so definitely kind of genre-free, but still, you know, I think it's a more mature and, you know, further progressed element of what we are. And I think, you know, like I mentioned before, the more you develop as a band, you know, I think the tighter that identity becomes. Also, the sets aren't going to be as much kind of like DJ, and not that it was ever completely really DJ-oriented, but like we're really breaking down what we do in terms of all our songs, and like we're going to be performing our songs pretty much. I mean, that's what it's going to be, and it's not, you know, not that we don't love playing other people's stuff too, but the focus is going to be on like really taking the live performance to a new level too, largely drawing from this album, and we're writing it in that way.
Well, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Yeah, man, no problem. Thanks for reaching out. It's cool that you guys are doing what you're doing.
Thanks for the kind words. I'd like to thank Dhruva Ganeshan of Subswara for being on the UNS podcast. On next week's program, my guest is Jason Han of the live improv breakbeat and dubstep duo Eodo. They'll be appearing at a ton of major festivals this summer. You don't want to miss this one. If you like what we're doing, contact me at anand@theuns.com. If you really enjoy it, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Remember to visit theuns.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. If you want to find out how you can support the UNS in your area, contact Avi at theuns.com. Catch you next week.